Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, and it's Ask Me Anything. You can ask whatever you like, but I'll tell you what, line's already filling up. 888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, the author of a whole bunch of books, including The Eucharist is Really Jesus, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. A man named Joseph, guardian for our times. I rarely get that one in. I don't know why I rarely get Joseph in there, but and many others. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks for being here with us.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, that's not the only media you do. You also have your beloved podcast. I'm not going to refer to it as the beloved podcast because so many people watch it, called Shameless Popery. So what's going on over at Shameless Popery?
Yeah, well, this one isn't out yet because I've just been working on it today. But I've got one coming out probably next week on the alleged pagan origins of Christmas.
Wait, what do you mean alleged? We all know that all Christian holidays are just stolen from the pagans.
This is right. Like, obviously, Christians over 2,000 years couldn't have any culture of their own.
No.
They must have gotten it from this one monolithic thing called paganism that includes somehow
everybody from but Christians.
Odin to Osiris.
Yeah.
And it's all like they all had one belief system. It's like, you can think about it. Like, the word pagan is a Christian term for non-Christians. It's like the word foreigner.
Yeah.
So imagine if someone thought foreigners were a country, and they're like, oh, yeah, foreigners. They like pierogies and enchiladas.
Yeah,
and
those foreigners.
Yeah, it's like, maybe. Different cultures had different belief systems, and, oh, by the way, none of the ones that Christianity allegedly got December 25th or Christmas from actually could be shown to be older than Christmas.
Yeah.
So, you know, just those little things.
Yeah, that is funny. It's a weird desire to denigrate Christian holidays, like to be like, oh, those. And the thing is, I mean, Christianity is 2,000 years of engagement with things that are not Christian. There's all kinds of trading and sharing going on. I'm fairly certain the Christmas tree wasn't invented by the early Christians, but
It also wasn't invented by pagans.
Oh, it wasn't. Was it invented by God? Did God invent a Christmas tree?
Close. Medieval Franco-Germans in Alsace, Alsace and Baden. Those were originally kind of one region. Now they're in two different countries. Alsace is in France.
Little thing called World War One, Joe.
Yeah, little thing. I think downplaying that one doesn't get as much flack as downplaying the other one.
Yeah.
This is a very kind of modern sort of thing. The first hints of a Christmas tree we have really aren't until about the 15th century. And then they don't become, you know, universal until decently long after that. Even, you know, like there are these claims like, oh, Martin Luther was the first to have the Christmas tree. And it's like, no, Wittenberg didn't even have Christmas trees until the 1700s. Like, the stuff we associate with Christmas, what the actual digging into the history reveals is that a lot of these things we think of as these, you know, ancient traditions aren't.
Nah. Yeah, right.
And most of them come down to people want to have a party. And so they find something that's kind of party-ish.
Yeah.
They take a big log, they call it the Christmas log, and eventually, to make it sound older, they call it the Yule log. and then they light it on fire so they can have a party for a long time.
Yeah, I like it. That's very Catholic. Let's have a party.
Yeah.
Catholic is, we're all a lot about feasting. We're not only about feasting, but we're a lot about feasting. This is in the Bible, though, right? Getting a goose for the Cratchit family, that's in the Bible, isn't
it? Yeah, I think that's right between the part about the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future.
Yeah, okay. I just check it. I'm not really good with my Bible, but
I think,
I wanted
to make
sure.
When you're faced with past, present, and future like that, that had to have been a tense situation for Ebenezer Scrooge.
Past, present, future tense. Yeah, I'll if you'd like, we have a discussion group after on Joe's puns where we explain Joe's puns. We should have
You're
a
just
YouTube
like a bunch
group
of bah humbug types.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. You want to call and ask a question about Christmas? You can. I want to ask a question about Advent or whatever else. You are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I am going to go to a call right now. We'll start in Indiana. Nathan in Indiana, thank you for starting us off today. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hey, can you guys hear me okay?
I can. I don't know if Joe can. Let me check with Joe.
I can.
How about in the booth? Can you guys hear him okay? Okay. All right. Check.
Yeah, ask you're good.
Oh, okay. Sorry. My bad, Nathan. Go ahead. We could all hear you.
That's all right. So I was talking with an atheist the other day who was talking. I forget exactly how the conversation started, but we were talking about he was asking or he brought up that people have a tendency to sin, which is obviously called concupiscence. And you're saying why God would create people with the tendency to do wrong. And I said that, you know, humans were created with good natures and that we caused our nature to fall by choosing to turn away from God. And his response was that if God had created humans with good nature, they wouldn't have had the desire. They wouldn't have had the desire to do wrong, even if they were tempted. Which seemed, I didn't really know how to respond to that because I always kind of associated like the natures of Adam and Eve with the natures we'll have in heaven, because there wouldn't be any kind of flaw with them. So why did Eve or Adam have the desire to disobey God in the first place?
Wonderful. I'm going to give an analogy that I hope is helpful. Think about concupiscence like addiction. If you've been addicted to drugs yourself, or in some cases, even if you're born to someone who's addicted to drugs, you can have a craving for something that isn't good for you. And so it's easy to understand how, you know, somebody maybe who's in recovery and then relapses, we say, oh, okay, well, they're falling back into that because they have this addiction that hasn't been fully kind of healed. But then you say, well, surely then, no unaddicted person would ever get addicted to drugs, but we know that's not true. They aren't as prone to it, but it certainly happens, and it happens with some frequency. So if you think about concupiscence in that sense, there's no logical problem with believing Adam and Eve are created without concupiscence. They're created without a disorder in their soul, but still have the capacity to create disorder. They still have the capacity to sin. Now, they're only going to be tempted to certain types of sin, and I'll get into that in a second. But I want to make a distinction. What Adam and Eve have isn't the same as what we're going to have in heaven. Because it's true, you know, like the saints in heaven, they are without sin, you know, prior to the fall. But unlike the saints in heaven, they don't experience the fullness of God and his glory, which is that for which every human heart is made and for which we're longing. And so the saints and angels in glory are totally content. And so they're unable to sin, not because God is like holding them back from some sin that they'd want to do, but because there's nothing they could possibly want that they don't already have. Adam and Eve seem on maybe the surface to be in that same position, but they're really not, in two ways. Number one, they don't see God in the fullness of his glory. They clearly have some experience of the majesty and grandeur of God. It's described in the account as God walking with them in the cool of the evening, but they're not constantly beholding the presence of God. The second thing they're lacking is what's sometimes called divinization, being made like God. And one of the Christian promises is that God becomes man to make us like him, that we become partakers in the divine nature, as St. Peter says. And as St. John says, beloved, we're children of God. What we shall be has not yet been revealed, but we know when it's revealed, we'll be like him, for we will see him as he is. So the Christian promise is that we'll pass, as St. Paul says, from glory into glory, becoming like God. Adam and Eve don't have that. And that is what Satan tempts them with. So St. Thomas Aquinas actually addresses this exact question in the second part of the Summa, question 163, article 2. And he makes the point, because there's, you know, you and I can be tempted for all sorts of things that just draw upon the disordered nature. Of, you know, our passions are often in the driver's seat. Adam and Eve didn't have that. They wouldn't have been tempted in that way. You couldn't just put a really tempting cinnamon roll or some woman who wasn't Adam's wife. Nothing like that would have worked as a temptation. So what does the devil do? He promises them, you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. In other words, he promises that they'll be made godlike. Now, we know the full story. We know God wants to make us godlike. We know Adam and Eve hadn't received that gift yet. And so the devil's promise to them is basically, I can get that for you without God. I can make you gods without God. And in that way, become basically rivals with God. Now, that's not authentic divinization. That is rebellion from God. Like, God wants to make us godlike through him. He wants to make us godlike in union with him. The devil wants the opposite. So that's at the heart of the temptation. So notice there's a very narrow set of things the devil could have possibly tempted them with, because it has to be, number one, something that they're lacking, and number two, something that is authentically good. And being like God meets both of those criteria. I don't know that there is another thing he could have tempted them with that would have worked. So that's what causes him to go astray. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah.
All right, we're going to count that as a win then. I'm just going to put that in the win column. Nathan, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Thanks for getting us started. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. We'll be back right after this with more Ask Me Anything on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN Radio broadcasts 24/7 on smart speakers, a worldwide shortwave radio service, and radio services for the Philippines, Great Britain, and Ireland. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Lots of folks on the calls. We're going to get back to the phones. I just want to ask you this, Joe. Did you hear about our poll yesterday that we did on the air?
No.
Oh, we did a poll with Tim Staples. Don't lie. When do you put the baby Jesus in the manger?
Oh, my gosh. You got to do that on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day.
24% of our listeners agreed with you on Christmas Eve. 27% agreed with Christmas Day.
Okay, that's a majority. The rest... you need to stop listening. Actually, they probably
Don't never say that, Joe. Never.
You're
ever.
Not welcome to listen.
Not even as a joke do we
you
say
can
stop
be an
listening.
Atheist, you can be an agnostic.
But you can't get the
baby Jesus in during Advent. That is outrageous.
31% of people put baby Jesus in during Advent. And you know what those people are called? Fine. Good Catholics. Excellent people.
I come from such a family.
Do you come from such a family? And they're a good family, right? They're a worthy family.
I had to explain.
I'm sick of people bossing everybody around about when baby Jesus can get in the manger. Settle down, people.
I'm tired of there being a season called Advent before I can get to Christmas.
I have no problem with the season of Advent. I just don't think that everybody has to do the exact same thing. But 17% said I don't have a nativity scene.
That's an easy problem to fix.
Is it? Like, where would you get a nativity scene? I don't even know where I would go. Let me guess where you would go. If you wanted to get a nativity scene, wait, now where would you go? Not Home Depot.
I'm going to give an embarrassingly out-of-touch answer.
I think you would go to, not JCPenney. I honestly don't know where you would go to get it. Darren, do you know where you would go? Do you know? Go ahead, tell me. Where would you go to get a nativity scene? Amazon. Don't say Amazon, man. Amazon ruined everything. I guess that is where
I was going to say, if you want a really good one, come on pilgrimage with Catholic Answers. And when you're in Rome, go to Fontanini and Borgo Pio.
Right.
And they have great ones that are wax resin, which, and they're pretty darn durable, which is great if you have small kids who see plastic looking animals and want them to fight.
So there's two places just for you. This is basically the informational part of the show. There's two places to get a nativity: Amazon or the city of Rome. Those are the only two places.
But I assumed he meant like the Amazon in Brazil.
No, he doesn't.
Are we just going fully internationally here?
John in Arlington, Virginia, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. You are up next. Go ahead, John, with your question.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you taking my call.
Oh, we're happy to.
Yeah, we're happy to be taking it.
So a good friend of mine is a Greek Orthodox priest, and we have regular discussions about our respective traditions. And it always seems to me that much of what separates us is not so much irreconcilable theologies, but a difference of emphasis, vocabulary, the ways in which the Eastern and Western churches have developed historically. But the elephant in the room always seems to be the papacy and the question of authority in the church. Mm-hmm. Now, he, of course, argues that the earliest church was Orthodox with a capital O. So my question is, does our characterization of it as Catholic really come down at the end of the day to the office of Peter, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I'd say both. It is Petrine. There is also more to it than that. I mean, it's not just Peter to Francis. There's a lot more theology that goes into that. But I think I would start by putting the question like this. Among the 12, did one of them have a special role, namely St. Peter? And the answer to that seems to be very clearly yes. And that is historically the answer that both Eastern and Western fathers would give. Now, that carries on, and this is something that both Eastern and Western fathers will also concede, in the authority that the Pope has. Now, there are other ways that this kind of model of leadership carries on as well. So we can talk about apostolic sees plural to mean both Rome, where Peter, Jerusalem, Antioch, and Rome are all founded by Peter. And then Peter's disciple Mark founds Alexandria. So those four become very important early on. And then eventually Constantinople kind of works its way in there as a fifth one on account of being, second Rome or new Rome. Not in a way that they can replace Rome. In fact, very clearly, ecumenical councils talk about them as being below Rome. But there's clearly this sense that, what's sometimes called the Pentarchy has this special role because of two things, Peter and then Rome. So four of the five, it's because of Peter. And then two of the five, Rome and Antioch, it's also this Roman dimension. So Rome has all of that. And so when the Apostolic See is referred to in the singular, even in ancient documents, it refers to Rome and this special authority in Rome. So you go to, for instance, St. Irenaeus in 180 in Against Heresies, Book 3, Chapter 3, when he's talking about the need for all Christians to agree with the Church of Rome because it's founded by the glorious apostles Peter and Paul. This isn't some, late medieval sort of invention. This is something we find as early as we find references, for instance, to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John being the four Gospels. So if that's true, if Jesus really does found a church and has one guy with some kind of special authority, we don't have to know the exact contours of it, some kind of special authority, and this special authority continues in the person of the Bishop of Rome, and I think any authentic, reasonable observer would say those two things were believed in by Christians in both the Eastern and Western halves of the empire. Irenaeus is from the East. He's from Smyrna. So he's a good example of that. You have that and you say, okay, well, what church has that? And so even the Eastern Orthodox tend to concede some kind of primacy would belong to the Pope, to the Bishop of Rome. So that's what I would start with and say, okay, well, one of these two churches has that we both agree Jesus appeared to create. And it's not the Eastern Orthodox. The Eastern Orthodox have a lot of other things. We can recognize them as authentic churches. I'm not trying to just bash on them or anything like that. But the one thing missing is something that we can clearly see was created by Christ. Then I think you could make a whole second line of just almost pragmatic kind of arguments that, hey, how do we know which things are and aren't valid ecumenical councils? Historically speaking, it was whether or not they were accepted by the Pope. So you have what's called the Robert Council, which appeared to be a valid ecumenical council, but the Pope rejected it. And so it doesn't have any authority in either the East or the West. You have the fact that right now, like, the Byzantine Orthodox and the Russian Orthodox are in schism with each other, and there's no higher authority either one of them can appeal to. And so you need some place with which the buck stops, and that makes sense with the Pope. Very last thing I'd say, this fits into a much broader story of salvation history, that God, when he is creating order among his people, almost invariably has someone with whom the buck stops. The patriarchs, the judges, the kings, and all the way down. And that continues with Peter. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you. I knew you were the guy to ask this.
You know what? If you want to stick around and give us your address, we'll send you a copy of Pope Peter, because that is a book-length kind of exploration of some of those same kind of ideas.
Hang on. John, we'll get Pope Peter in the mail to you. If you'd like, just give Edgar your address. The number here is 888-318-7884. Lines all full right now. Joe Heschmeyer, Shameless Popery is his podcast. You can just look up Shameless Popery. You'll find it. You can go to shamelessjoe.com. Do you hear these arguments about Christmas being a pagan holiday? Well, Joe's got an episode coming up just to that, just dedicated to that. Is Christmas just stolen from the pagans? Well, first of all, who's the pagans and who stole it? yeah. But a lot more to check out there. And so many great episodes over at Shameless Popery, shamelessjoe.com. All righty, let's go to our friend Aaron in Hastings, Michigan, watching on YouTube. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, how do you know when you're in a Calvinistic church?
No one's happy. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. I'm only joking. It's a joke. I was just a joke. I apologize.
That's a good question. So the term is used a little loosely. So typically the five marks of Calvinism are what's called TULIP, defined at the Calvinistic Synod of Dort, and or kind of promulgated by the Synod of Dort. And so the acronym refers to a belief in total depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and the perseverance of the saints. Now, some Calvinists are what are called four-point Calvinists, where they'll believe in four of those five. Usually, they don't believe in limited atonement. Limited atonement is the belief that Jesus didn't die for all sinners. He only died for some. And since that is pretty directly contradicted by Scripture, a lot of Calvinists will say, well, I don't believe in that one. But if you believe in, I'd say, four out of those five things, I think people would typically call you a Calvinist. The other way you could approach the question is kind of tracing the origins. So in many cases, if you're asking that question, I'm tempted to say you might be going to like an evangelical or non-denominational church. Is that a fair read? Or kind of what's the background to the question?
To a PCA, Presbyterian Church of America?
Oh, yeah. PCA comes from the Calvinist tradition. So Presbyterianism more broadly. Now, technically, it's more complicated because you could be Presbyterian in structure without being a Calvinist, but PCA is coming from this kind of broader Calvinist trajectory.
Hmm. Okay. Because I'm still a lapsed Catholic, but, and it's just, I've been going there for about 6 months now, and I seem to enjoy it, but because the scriptures are, the sermons, I mean, are directly from the Bible, mm-hmm. and it, it's just kind of hard for me to go back to the Catholic Church just because of the fact that, at least over here in my town, because I don't drive, and it's farther away.
Yeah.
And not too much, but especially right now with this weather.
Sure.
But, yeah, for me, it's just more convenient not saying that's an excuse, good excuse, but and
yeah,
guys.
I mean,
I told
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Like I told oh, I can't think of his name now.
Edgar?
Carlo.
Or
oh, Carlo. Oh,
okay. Carlos.
Yeah.
I had an experience with a local Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really hard for me to go back there because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe?
Well, I don't know all the ins and outs of your situation, but I would suggest this. Number one, Jesus really does care. Like, he's not agnostic on the question of, or like, you know, he's not indifferent to the question of what church you're a part of or what denomination you're a part of. Like, he promises he's going to create a church. And so we can trace PCA back through a whole series of schism back to the 16th century. Christ has created a church, and I think it's incumbent upon all Christians to find it. At a practical level, and this is the last thing I'll say, because I think we got to cut to the break, try to find good Catholic community. So if you're someone in Hastings, maybe this is a time to step up, throw yourself out there on Facebook or on YouTube, and let's see if we can't create more of a community for Aaron, maybe someone who can even...
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
From its earliest days, Catholic faith has been lived by a yearly cycle of feasts and seasons. The new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, Feasts of Our Fathers, is a one-stop companion for praying and meditating through the holy days and seasons of the church with help from the most ancient Christian people. Don't just read about the early saints, pray with them. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers now at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Lots of great conversations yet to be had. It's Ask Me Anything if you've got a question for Joe. As you can hear from the callers, you don't have to be Catholic to call. You want to know about Jesus or the Bible or the moral teachings of the church, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. You can go to shop.catholic.com today and check out one of the biggest and best collections of Catholic books online. Also, courses, like e-courses you can take, e-books, MP3s, and more. Tons of stuff. And Black Friday and Cyber Monday might be over, but our greatest store-wide sale prices are not. We've got new specials dropping every day that will make you smile. Check it out right now at shop.catholic.com. I looked. I didn't see any nativity scenes there. I thought that's what we should. I mean, I should have sent people to shop.catholic.com for nativity scenes, but there are Catholic like bookstores and stuff that sell them. So we probably should have said that.
I actually was going to say that in the beginning. I totally forgot. It's worth paying a little bit extra to support your local Catholic bookstore, partly because they're these little outposts of evangelization where people who aren't Catholic or maybe they're sort of lukewarm, they'll stop in because, you know, there's a confirmation or a quinceañera or something, and they're wanting a gift, and they might say, oh, that looks like an interesting book, or that, you know.
I never knew that the Eucharist is really Jesus. And then they right. get that book, and they read it.
And so it's a great way to promote the Catholic faith in a very on-the-ground, incarnational sort of way.
So to that 17% of Catholics who do not have a nativity scene, find yourself a Catholic bookstore. Hey, we're online, and Thomas does all kinds of social media for Catholic Answers. As a matter of fact, just this week got an email. Can Thomas help us? Another Catholic apostolate. Did you ever call them?
This is the first time hearing about that.
Didn't I send it to you?
No, you did not. So you might have.
Oh, I might have sent it back to the guy who sent it.
Yeah,
oh no! So all right, I'm going to find it.
They think one of us is ghosting them. That's really embarrassing.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, if you're listening, who was it?
No, I don't want to say.
You can't even remember.
I don't want to say.
If you guys are listening, like, Cy got it. He just didn't pass it on.
You know who you are. I said, yeah, I'll hook you up with Thomas, and then I guess I didn't include you on the email.
Cool.
My bad there, Thomas.
Cool.
Chris Check told me to mention a whole bunch of, we're on the Facebooks, the YouTubes, but we're also on the TikToks, the Twitches, the Twitters of the world, the Scrunchies. We're everywhere on social
Pinterest.
Media.
Maybe not Pinterest.
Are we on Pinterest? I don't think
we're
don't
on
say
Pinterest.
Things we're not on. We are on Pinterest.
I don't run it, but we are on Pinterest.
Oh, thank you to who's ever keeping us on Pinterest.
Yeah, look at that.
So now Thomas comes in and does a question from TikTok, which is where all the cool kids hang out or something. I don't know. Then he goes back with the answer from Joe. So you got a question for him from Scrunchy?
I do. Can we pause on that for a second?
No, Chris, just keep going.
Chris Check, bless his heart. I love him. He does not hide his lack of knowledge about the social media world, which is a good thing for a president of an organization.
It's a nice mix of ignorance and disdain, I would
say. Right. Yes. I know nothing about it, and I hate it.
I think it's really healthy for the leader of a Catholic organization.
My toddler's with any food that isn't brown.
Right. It's very healthy for him as the leader of a Catholic organization to have that attitude and pass off to me the responsibilities.
Yeah, totally.
But every time he wants to like say anything about a social media platform, he always makes some ridiculous portmanteau of internet lingo. Right. Like he says, Thomas, can you make a face friend about that? Can you post an Instapin online for that? And today, the word he came up with, you said it was scrunchy.
Yeah, he said, that's one, isn't it? Scrunchy?
Yeah, and I thought it was, it's actually astounding. You have to work really hard to find a word that has nothing to do whatsoever with anything on the internet.
Anything on social media. Yeah,
anything
right.
on the internet. And he found it, and he thought that was an internet word.
He doesn't even have daughters. If you have daughters, you know what a scrunchy is.
Exactly.
Because that's the thing that holds a girl's hair. But he doesn't even have daughters, and he came up with scrunchy for his. And so then he told Thomas, you'll make millions. Start it, Thomas.
A social media platform.
All right, Thomas, give us the TikTok question.
Yeah, enough of that. We love Chris.
He's, do we? I mean, yes, we do. Yes, we definitely do.
Speaking only for myself, I guess. All right. Joe.
2 out of 3.
To business. Joe, this person on TikTok, they asked us, can you go to heaven without the sacraments or if you die in the process of becoming Catholic?
Oh, yeah. Certainly if you die in the process of becoming Catholic. That's what's called baptism of desire. And very clearly, the fruits of baptism would still apply. And the Catechism talks about this explicitly in paragraph 1258. So the thing to remember here is God has bound us to the sacraments, but he is not himself bound by the sacraments. That line is from paragraph 1257 of the Catechism. And so think about it like this. If Jesus tells you to do something, there's three possible outcomes. Number one, you do it. Number two, you intentionally disobey him. Or number three, for some other reason, you don't succeed. That other reason could be you didn't know. You know, innocently, you were unaware. He wanted you to do something. It could be you tried to do it and then died in the process. It could be that you were physically incapable of doing it. And so the first group, heaven, right? Like baptism salvific. The second group, not heaven. The third group, still heaven, if it's not their fault. Like that's not disobedience. I mean, there may be some other area you're disobeying, but the broad point here is there's a difference between disobeying God and being kind of clueless about something. Does that help?
We will find out from our lovely commenter. But
oh, yeah,
I thought,
good point.
I thought that was a great explanation.
You're the
Joe.
Avatar of all of TikTok.
Yeah,
you know?
And soon to be Scrunchy, I guess, too.
Take it back to Scrunchy.
Well, you know,
man.
I've got a question for you, TikTok Thomas.
Well, this is not how this works.
Pinterest isn't the one where you poke. Like, there's poking on Facebook, but Pinterest has pen in it.
There was poking on Facebook. They should bring it back, but I don't know.
I didn't know
why
they didn't
is.
Have it still. No one.
It scared
no one
me the first
me.
Time.
Do,
I didn't
I
know what it was. It scared the heck out of me.
It's such a weird, like, it's the kind of social interaction that's been invented by people who don't seem like they'd be good at social interaction.
Which is also called
life.
The internet.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Right.
That's the entire
hey,
internet.
You know
that's
how
the point.
When
yeah.
you want to show someone you like them, you poke them? And it's like, no.
No.
I don't I don't know that.
I mean, we could bring it into real life and see how that works. I'm down for it because, yeah.
See you, Thomas.
All right. I don't like science.
Thanks for coming in. Thomas, right. The TikTok engine, he comes in. He asks questions, brings them, the answers back to TikTok. Let's go to Levi in Virginia, listening on Catholic.com, our website. Go ahead, Levi, with your question.
Thank you. Peace be with you.
And with your spirit.
All right. Now that that's out, now that the formalities are out of the way.
Is that all that was? That was a formality? You didn't actually want
well,
us?
Well, no. It's, not, it's hospitality, okay?
Well, okay. All right.
Do I have to talk about, like, Joe's bourgeoisie nativity scenes that you got to get in Rome or whatever?
Excuse
to
me.
Wait, the thing is, if you're going to make Joe look bad, I will give you as much time as you need.
He's wearing a Boston Celtics sweater as, like, a scarf right now. I don't know how much the
I'm
bourgeoisie
a fan.
Thing is going to apply
what can
to
I tell
me
you?
Here.
I'm a fan of the Boston Celtics. Don't be a hater, man. Don't be a hater just because you don't have any championships. Levi, go ahead with your question.
Okay, all right. Now that we're off of that debacle.
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Okay. Joe, first of all, I love your big fan of your work, especially a certain podcast that airs every Tuesday and Thursday. But my question has to do with prayer and how do we deal with it? Okay. So you as a Catholic encounter many different types of prayer, or at least, well, yeah, let's just roll with that. There is, you know, praying directly to God. There is the use of, sort of other kinds of rituals of prayers, I guess you could call it. So, like, for instance, people who, like, pray the rosary or pray a novena or a litany, whatever. And then there is, of course, the seeking the intercession of the saints. My question is, often whenever we pray, whatever it's about, whenever if it's, you know, God, you know, help me to, you know, be more conformed to the way that you want me to live, or, you know, God can you help me or someone I know with this situation, or God, can you help me to grow in virtue? Can you give some kind of reassurance for this? We pray this and we try to do it what James tells us to do in his love book, which is to trust in that. But sometimes we don't necessarily feel as though that has been answered. If we ask for growth in a virtue, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, hey, the next time we sin or something that, oh, hey, or the next time we are in some kind of situation that there's just magically going to be some kind of virtue there. So whenever we get to this whole thing of feeling as though, you know, something has not happened, what's the right way to deal with this? What's the right way to deal with the feeling that prayer has been unanswered, whether that be to God or to the saints?
All right, Levi.
Yeah. Oh,
no,
sorry,
ahead.
Did you say something?
No, I just said thank you for the question.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thank you very much, Levi. And thank you for the shout out to the Nameless podcast.
I don't know why it's nameless. Shameless popery.
it's secret. You gotta find it. Is that a good idea for it? No. Anyway, to your question, it's a really good one. I think there's a few things to say there. Number one, we should, in asking prayers, try to make sure that we're asking for things that are good. And in the case that you're describing, that certainly seems to be the case. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that as at least part of the answer. You mentioned James. In James chapter 4, he says in verse 3, you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. So that there are times where God won't give us the things that we're asking for in prayer because they're not good things. We can also say there are times where God doesn't give us what we're asking for in prayer, because he wants something better for us. But those are the two reasons. Now, sometimes what he wants for us is persistence. So if you remember the parable Jesus tells of the persistent widow, he shows that as an example of how to pray with perseverance without giving up. Now, if God just immediately gave you whatever you wanted, as long as it was good, then you wouldn't have that. So, you know, the fact that this is, there's even a need for such a parable tells you, I think, something about the nature of the relationship we have with God in prayer. And so in Luke chapter 18, verse 1, Jesus says that he tells them this parable to the effect that they ought always to pray and not lose heart. So Jesus knows there will be times when you're praying and you're tempted to lose heart because you're not getting what you're wanting in the time frame that you're wanting it. But one of the reasons prayer is given to us in the first place is a sort of school of discipleship. It teaches us how to be reliant upon God. That the bad way of prayer, the bad way of conceptualizing prayer, is God is a divine vending machine. You know, if I push the right buttons, if I say the right words, then the thing that I want will come out. Or you don't want to think about God as like your butler in the sky who's, you know, going to deliver the things that you want if you just ring the bell. No, rather, it's much more like a child going to a loving father. And, you know, I mean, I understand sometimes parents think of their kids, or excuse me, kids think of their parents almost like butlers as well. But that's not a healthy view. The healthy view is learning, like, I don't always get what I want when I want, even if it's not a bad thing. And I'm learning how to be a son and not just the boss in that situation. And then the last piece I'd say, this comes from a delightful book that I would actually really recommend called Difficulties in Mental Prayer by an Irish monk by the name of Dom Eugene Boylan. And he talks about how our own assessment of prayer is a very poor indicator of the value of our prayer. That sometimes something feels like, you know, an amazing experience of prayer, and it was really just like you had some good thoughts. And other times, something feels like a very dry period of prayer. Maybe it's because we prayed for something and didn't get it right away. Maybe it's because we were, you know, struggling with distraction the entire time. But the effect is, we were constantly in this position of relying upon God, of leaning upon God. And so even though we come away from it maybe feeling dissatisfied in some regard, that might have been the exact thing that we needed spiritually. He puts it like this. He says, if we could only realize how much this continual turning back to God shows him our real love for him and pleases him more than that rapt attention that has its roots in self-love, we should never be dissatisfied with our prayer on account of its numerous distractions. And I would add to this, we wouldn't be dissatisfied with our prayer just because we didn't get what we wanted at the end of it, because we were in this time of prayer and we were showing God our love for him, our attentiveness to him. And whether we got or didn't get the thing we were asking for, it may have been kind of minor by comparison. And maybe actually, I'm going to add one more thing, and I know this is potentially controversial. This is true even when you're asking for virtue in the fight against sin. Because the danger is, if you're winning all of your other fights against temptation, you might be losing the fight against pride, the deadliest of the deadly sins, because you feel like you have the whole thing basically under control. And so sometimes God allows us to struggle with lesser sins and to see our own weakness because he knows it's good for our humility and might help us win a spiritual battle we're too blind to even realize that we need to be fighting, namely the fight against pride.
And you know what? I'm going to just leave that there because we're a little bit late for the break. So it's always nice to talk with you. And it was not a formality, I'm sure, on your part or ours to bless one another with Christ's peace. But we'll have to see you next time, Levi. I look forward to it. We'll take a quick break. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's Ask Me Anything. And there's a lot more coming up right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul Street Evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
This is Conversations with Consequences, where we delve deeper into issues affecting our church, our country, and our core, the family.
As Catholics, we need to be informed, aware, and able to talk through some of the tough topics that we're facing in our culture and in our world. Conversations with Consequences gives us the tools to do so.
It's not enough to pray. We have to be a light for the world.
Conversations with Consequences, Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Mr. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest, coming to us from the middle of the country. We're coming to you from the left coast. You can call from anywhere, anywhere in the world that you can dial 888-318-7884 and get through. We'll take the call. As a matter of fact, if you call from a country we call foreign, there's two kinds of people, apparently, Americans and foreigners. Is that what you were saying, Joe? You were making a point earlier. Did I get that point wrong?
But, yeah, sort of.
But if you're a foreigner, you go to the top of the line.
There's the people that you describe your own people, and then there's people you describe as everybody else. The Greeks invented the delightful word barbarian,
yes,
because that was what non-Greek language sounds like.
Yeah, and pagan was originally a derogatory word that Christians used.
Paganus meant like a hick or a hillbilly. It's somebody from the country. But it also, it came through that to mean a non-combatant.
Oh.
Because like you don't want to kill the villagers. And so early Christian writers talking about the army of Christ would distinguish them from the non-combatants, the pagans. So, yeah, I like the idea that people claim to be like neo-pagans and they're just like neo-hillbillies without knowing what they're doing etymologically.
Just FYI, I don't think we consider Canadians or Mexicans foreigners. That you're calling from North America, you stay in line with everybody else. You got to be from... from off the North American continent, like some.
This feels way too political. I'm not ready to do any line jumping.
It's geographic. It's just entirely geographical. Audrey,
1812 is the only reason Canada is not the 51st state.
I am not getting into that, especially in today's political climate. I am not discussing.
That's what I'm saying.
Why are you trying to drag me into? We love you, Canada. Stay classy, Canada. Audrey in Denver, Colorado, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Audrey. Hi, Audrey.
I just finished Pope Peter, which was absolutely fantastic. And tomorrow I am starting a Teacher of Strange Things. So no competition between you two anymore. They're both taken care of.
Oh,
Audrey,
God,
if you want to stick around after this, I will send you a different book.
No, let her... She's doing, Joe, you're a horrible person.
I thought that's what she was calling.
No, yeah. I'm going to read Teacher of Strange Things unless I can get another free book. Yeah, all right.
No, but I'm working with a evangelical friend. She has a lot of questions about the Marian doctrines and the dogmas in particular. And so I've been approaching it through the lens of good Mariology leads to good Christology.
Yeah,
the doctrines always point to Christ. And we haven't gotten to the Assumption yet, but I'm trying to get all my ducks in a row before I get there. And I'm not sure that I know how to explain the Assumption and how that points to Christology.
Great. Yes, because it points to the resurrected nature of the body. That one of the perennial struggles that we have, particularly in the modern age, is not knowing what to do with the body. And this goes all the way back to Gnosticism. The idea that, oh, your soul is good, but your body is bad. And, oh, your spirit is just trapped inside your body. And you hear this kind of craziness when somebody dies and they're like, well, heaven gained another angel. And it's like, that's not how that works. You know, like if you took the wings off a bird, you wouldn't be like, I made another man. Like, no, those are different creatures. Those are, you know, St. Michael didn't used to be like an insurance salesman in Milwaukee or something. It's, you know, they're two separate things. So we are body and soul. And there's been this longstanding tendency, and you see it from the early days of Protestantism, and frankly, you see it in early Gnosticism, of wanting to tear the body down and treat it as just like a wicked, deplorable thing, while treating the soul as good. And that actually is totally counter to Christianity. The devil, the mortal enemy of Christians, is a spiritual being. He does not have a body. Meanwhile, Christ does have a body. He's incarnate. He's in the flesh. And so if you imagine that bodiliness is a problem, then you've missed something. So part of what's going on with the Assumption of Mary is reminding us of the goodness of the body and the goodness of human destiny. That tells us both something about what's going to happen to us, that when, you know, so if you ask Christians, not, I don't just mean like the way this has infected like the broader world. If you ask ordinary Christians, what's the Christian message about, you know, death and the afterlife and eternity? A lot of people have this idea that it's either A, we get rid of our bodies and just live spiritually with Jesus in heaven forever, or B, we get rid of our bodies and get totally new ones in the new heavens and the new earth. Neither of those are the Christian message. We get glorified bodies, but they're still our bodies. In 1 Corinthians 15, St. Paul compares it to a seed that rises. When you see, you know, the full corn, that looks pretty different from the kernel, but it's still the same plant, or the acorn that becomes the oak tree. It isn't that you got rid of the acorn and replaced it with an oak tree. No, no, the acorn grew up and was transformed. The Christian message, it begins with the resurrection. The first fruits of this, as St. Paul says again in 1 Corinthians 15, is this bodily transformation. When Christ dies on the cross, it isn't, oh, now he's freed from his body. No, the body is worth redeeming, and it is redeemed, and so it rises again with him. He rises, body and soul, on Easter Sunday. And we will rise someday. And Mary has risen through the power of the resurrection as another forerunner of what's going to happen to us. So Mary shows the way that we are going to go as disciples of Jesus, and thus puts the body back in its proper place in this story of Christianity. Because without it, you fall very easily into these kind of Gnostic-like heresies.
Does that help you, Audrey?
Thank you very much. That was very helpful.
All right.
Good.
Well, if you like my book, can you call and give it a good review like you just did, Joe? And if you don't like it, just never call again?
I can't promise on the second one, but I promise I will call and let you know if I like it.
Okay, Audrey.
I will
Thank
say,
you.
All kidding aside, Sai's book is very good. And it's, and you know, I think a lot of people are like, well, I've already read books about Jesus. But the whole point of Sai's book is how weird Jesus's teaching is. And so if you don't understand what that means, like if you don't understand, like sometimes you hear it so often, you don't notice the oddity of it. And so what I like about your book, Sai, is that you just remind us like, hey, this thing he said is real strange.
That's so kind of you, Joe.
Yeah, it's worth remembering.
Because we always tease each other about, and now you have inspired me. I'm going to read one of your books. Thank you.
If you need someone to sound out the words, there are plenty of people.
Man. I'll just look at the pictures. Thank you, Audrey.
Have a great evening, guys.
You too. Devontae in Odessa, Texas. Thank you for calling, Devontae. Go ahead with your question.
How are you guys doing today?
Very well. Thank you.
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Joe. I was calling to ask for spiritual wisdom, spiritual discernment with, you know, I'm not the same prideful Protestant I was over 10 years ago whenever I first started calling in 2015, 9 years. I've been discerning.
God bless you for that. It sounds like he's been at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hurts. I've been discerning whether to become Catholic for like the past 2 years, and I honestly really don't have any more objections. I've just been sitting. Because I agree with my wife that I wouldn't study it for a while because I was just doing it in an unhealthy manner. Wisdom on, then how do you, what is a healthy way of like sitting in that and still pursuing the Lord? Because the tendency can be, at least for myself, but I know I'm not that unique, to make it everything. Because whenever I was listening to it every day and studying, it was like, make a decision, make a decision, make a decision, make a decision.
Yeah. Oh,
but whenever
yeah.
I stepped back from it, it was like, okay, this is actually relieving. So it's like, what is the middle ground here?
Devontae, you are such an inspiring person. I feel like I think it's beautiful to say you've been humbled. And I think anybody who has followed the Lord knows that. I am saying this in part to ask you to hold through the break because I didn't want, this is too important for me to ask Joe.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, wrap it up.
I don't want to rush it.
Yeah. So if you'll hang on, Devante, we'll come back to you on the other side and talk to Joe. I feel like I could say what Devante said. I'm not the same prideful. He said not the same prideful Protestant, but I'm not the same prideful Catholic I was 10 years ago. God does that. And it's not. Yeah. I just want to say that because I don't want anyone to think Devante is not insulting Protestants. He's just saying the Lord has a way of humbling us if we listen to him. Joe, we'll come back to him on the other side, okay?
That sounds good.
Take a quick break. Right back with more Ask Me Anything on Catholic Answers Live.